extracting it carefully. Marissa and I stepped forward again.
It sounds plausible to me. I can take a look at it later and see if I can figure out anything about it if you'd like.
Sure, I replied, trying to regain my focus. I'd fought a few people who liked to chat constantly. It was almost always a deliberate distraction. He can use fire and earth magic, as well as whatever that cutting aura is. He's also much faster and stronger than we are. I need to compensate for that and catch him off guard. I looked at Marissa and said two words. Flank him! I stepped to the side, rather than forward, and Marissa mirrored my movement. His eyes flicked back and forth between us, but he showed no sign of concern. I cut the air, pushing another shockwave at him. Karis raised another wall as I'd hoped. For a moment, he couldn't see me. In that moment, I activated the jumping ring, but I didn't jump. I just angled my feet. I'd practiced this. The ring activated and blasted me forward, following in the shockwave's wake. When the shockwave hit the wall of flame and dispersed it, I was right behind, lunging toward Karis's face. He tilted his head to the side, avoiding the attack effortlessly. Marissa was right behind him, swinging her dueling cane with the blade extended. He caught the blade between two fingers, then snapped the steel in half. Marissa hopped back, grimacing. I swung again, and he batted my sword out of the way. For a moment, right before his hand met the sword, his aura shifted to fire. Vapor rose from Celise Leanne's blade. Marissa threw a kick at the center of his back, and with my attunement active, I could see her shroud concentrated around her leg. He swatted her foot with an open palm, and she flew backward, landing and sliding about 10 feet away. For that moment, he looked distracted. The sword attacks were too obvious, so I switched my grip momentarily and fired a blast of gray mana from my gauntlet instead. That hit him straight on. I didn't see the telltale flicker of a barrier or shroud. He patted the spot on his chest where the bolt had struck and nodded to me. Not bad. Wasn't expecting that one. While Marissa closed the distance again, Karis stood up. Marissa threw the broken dueling cane at him. He sidestepped the hurled weapon, and I used that moment to slash at his midsection. He grabbed the blade of my weapon faster than I could process. For a moment, nothing happened. Then the blade began to glow red instead of blue, and I saw steam rise from the surface. Alarmed, I tried to pull the weapon back, but his grip, even holding the blade, was far stronger than mine. I grabbed the hilt with both hands, wrenching against his strength, but to no avail. Marissa swung at him with a charged fist, but he stepped to the side again, seemingly without any effort. I released the grip on my weapon and blasted him with transference mana from my gauntlet. Kara slid back a few inches, then tossed my sword to the ground. I like the glove. That's useful. I glared at him. Please don't break my sword. Oh, I wouldn't do that. He blocked, rather than dodged, another swing from Marissa. Just needed to use some flame to make sure the ice wouldn't spread across my skin. That sword is dangerous, even to someone like me. I tried to blast him again, but he swatted it out of the way this time. Marissa followed up with another punch, but he grabbed her arm and hurled her past him. She hit the floor, rolled, and growled as she rose to her feet. Think, what can I do that can actually threaten him? I took a swing at him with the gauntlet, but he dodged my strike even more easily than he had with Marissa. My sword might be a real danger, but he knows about it, and he's been careful about it. I don't have anything else that can hit him harder than the cane. But Marissa does. He's been deliberately dodging or grabbing when she uses her arm. He must know about the bracer I gave her that can boost how hard she punches. And now she has that strength-enhancing ring, too. Karis glanced at Marissa, then back to me. Marissa was back on her feet, rushing toward us. I was only a few feet away from him now. I moved my arms to my sides and activated the jumping ring. Slamming into Karis was like hitting a brick wall, but my phoenix sigil absorbed some of the force of the impact. I wrapped my arms around him in the moment after impact. He broke my grip a second later, but I never had any hope of holding him for long. Just long enough for Marissa to punch him in the face. Karis staggered at the force of the blow, and I shoved my hand into his chest, activating my gauntlet repeatedly at point-blank range. I managed 4 direct hits before he caught my hand, twisted, and shoved me right into Marissa. We both stumbled at the impact, but managed to avoid falling over.
That was good teamwork, Karras rubbed his chin. I actually felt that. Been a while, Marissa beamed.
Got a lot more where that came from.
She put up her fists in a ready stance. I didn't have a weapon at this point, so I just mirrored her.
You ready for more?
Karras laughed.
Sure.
He sat back down. Go get your sword, Corrin. I glanced at Marissa, and she nodded. I went and picked up Selyse Lien. Karras let me walk back to Marissa without interfering. I inspected the blade. True to what Karras had claimed, it looked undamaged. A layer of ice had already spread back across the blade's surface.
You could go a little harder on us this time, Marissa offered. You weren't attacking at all.
She was right, I realized. Aside from that tiny ball of flame right at the beginning, he was fighting purely defensively, and given how easily I'd cut through the fire, that attack had probably been little more than a distraction. Maybe that was when he'd altered the stone in the floor.
I don't think you're ready for me to fight back,
Karras watched us with a taciturn expression.
We managed to hit you a few times there, I pointed out, and I managed to fight against Derek for a while. He seems to hold his own against you.
Karras shook his head.
I don't mean to imply either of you was a weak fighter. Not by any stretch of the imagination. Either of you would have been a good fight for me when I was your own age. But I think you're missing a couple important points.
Marissa lowered her guard for a moment to fold her arms.
What you mean?
One important thing to learn is that unless someone is highly specialized in defense, their defensive capabilities don't improve as much as their offensive capabilities do.
Karras folded his hands.
A Sunstone level attuned has 6 times more mana than a Carnelian. That means, in theory, they can cast an attack spell that's 6 times stronger. But their shroud doesn't block 6 times more damage, and they don't necessarily get any faster. There are ways around this to some degree. One of Derek's contracts is air-based and increases his speed. Another of his contracts is stone-based and increases his physical durability. But as an emerald, he has hundreds of times more mana than you do. And he doesn't have hundreds of times your speed or resilience. The same is going to be true for most high-powered fighters. Even an ordinary human could knock an emerald-level enchanter out with a swift blow from inside their shroud, unless that enchanter has spells or items that give them additional defense.
I understood all that, even if I'd never heard it put in those exact terms. It was the reason Jin was able to knock Ordin out with a surprise attack, for example.
Okay, sure, but Derek was attacking us during our fight, and we held out okay.
I talked to Derek about that fight. Ordin instructed him not to kill any of you. That particular command gave him some flexibility to hold back when fighting you.
That was no surprise. I could tell Derek was trying to resist the commands. He just wasn't able to break free.
Karras continued. Moreover, she ordered him not to summon the elementals from his weapons. Presumably she was worried that if he summoned them, they'd realize he was controlled and find a way to break him free. If he was trying to fight you at anything close to his full strength, that would have gone very differently.
I furrowed my brow.
That makes sense, but he was still attacking to subdue us. I'm sure you could hold back somewhat, too.
I could, but I still might hurt you. Derek is a fairly balanced fighter, since he's assigned his contracts to enhance his fighting in a number of different ways. I'm specialized in offensive melee combat. I don't have a traditional shroud, so I don't have the kind of defensive strength that someone like Derek does. But if I was attacking with any degree of seriousness,
he shook his head,
you wouldn't like the result.
Marissa put her arms back up.
Oh, come on. It's no fun if you don't fight back. Just for a minute.
Karras narrowed his eyes.
Corrin, do you agree with Marissa?
I nodded. I knew that Karras was probably the most dangerous person I'd ever fought against, but I wanted to see how much of a gap there was in our fighting ability. It would be useful to see just how far I had to go.
Just try not to snap us like twigs.
He grinned. I'll hold back as much as I can. Are you two ready?
Marissa shifted to a ready stance.
You bet!
I raised Selyse Lien defensively, moving close enough to Marissa that we were nearly touching. It would be easier for us to guard each other that way.
Ready.
Karras bowed his head.
Begin.
One moment, Karras was still sitting several feet away. The next, there was a sword at my throat.
And Marissa's throat, because we were next to each other and the blade was pretty long.
I'd say that I froze, but that would have implied I ever had a chance to move in the first place. Karras removed the sword slowly, deliberately, and slipped it back into the scabbard at his side. I'd known he could move fast when he wanted to. He'd been a blur during some of the fight against Derek, and even faster when he'd cut one of Katashi's attacks out of the air. But I hadn't experienced being on the receiving end of it. It was not a pleasant experience. Humbling would have been one way to put it. In that regard, Karras was right. He'd shown us just how absurd the idea of even the two of us fighting against him was. There was more to it, though. There was a sort of dysphoria in my mind, a degree of disbelief that anyone could move that quickly. Even if he had magic to make him move faster physically, how could he perceive that much faster than I could? It wasn't just that he teleported. He had to be able to stand up, move his arms to a completely different position, pick up the sword from the ground, unsheathe it, and then move to put his sword at our necks. Did he experience the passage of time in a different way than I did when he was moving like that? Or perhaps permanently? The latter was an even more daunting concept, because it implied a way of seeing the world that was completely alien. Maybe they were good questions, but all I managed to stammer was, "How?" Karras leveled his now sheathed sword in front of him. "A fair question, but we're not done yet." As if to punctuate the point, Marissa swung a fist, impacting the scabbard and battering it out of the way. She tried to follow up on the opening, but he kicked her in the chest, doubling her over. I swung Selyse Lien downward, but it was a feint. As he stepped back and avoided it, I tried something new. The Ring of Jumping used transference mana, the same type I used for enchanting all the time. I could feel it, and to some extent, control it. I activated the ring again, but I didn't let the mana seep into my legs and launch me forward. I refocused it, channeling it all into my left arm as I swung my fist at him. My own arm's motion was a blur, too fast for me to follow. It had worked. Karras grabbed my fist out of the air anyway. Interesting. He held my fist in an iron grip with a single hand, dodging effortlessly as I used my main hand to swing Selyse Lien at him again. Didn't think you'd be able to use the ring with that level of flexibility yet, but it was a good idea. You would have hit a slower opponent hard. He smiled. Unfortunately, you asked for me to put in more effort, and I have no intention of letting either of you hit me again. Karras released my hand, then flicked it with a finger like he had with the fireball earlier. My hand flew back, smashed by sudden kinetic force. The impact spun me, throwing off my next attempt at a swing. Marissa coughed, straightened, and flung her right arm out to her side. Her arm was encased in a blade-like aura, like the one Karras had shown us earlier. It looked considerably thicker than when she'd tried to use it in our dueling test a few days earlier. She swung the aura blade at him. He raised the scabbard to block, and the aura cut right through it and the sword within. Karras dropped the weapon with a surprised look, stepping back just before the aura connected with his body. "Not bad. You've been practicing without me," Marissa grinned. "Every night!" Then she lunged at him. Karras sidestepped, blurred, and then he was behind her. I tried to step forward, but he moved too fast. He brought an open hand down on Marissa's back. The impact blasted her downward and into the ground, cracking the stone floor. I backed off rather than lunging, swinging at the air and producing another crescent of ice. Karras had admitted to being a close combat specialist, so my best bet was to keep him at a distance. Karras stepped out of the way of the crescent, forming a ball of flame between his hands. I didn't like the look of that, so I activated the ring again, blasting myself backward, almost to the opposite side of the roof. He threw the sphere at Marissa while she was still pulling herself off the floor. It was a direct hit. Her Phoenix Sigil's barrier flickered and shattered on impact, but her shroud absorbed most of the rest of the blast. Most, but not all. The back of her shirt had a hole burned in it, and the skin beneath was reddened and burned. I heard her let out a pained shout. "Mara!" I started, but then Karras was in front of me. I took another swing at him out of instinct, but he just batted it to the side with an open hand. I grabbed him with my other hand and activated the Ring of Jumping, focusing the energy into him. The blast shot him backward, almost off the roof. Almost. He stopped right at the edge, shaking his head.
Not bad, Corrin,
but not enough. Marissa hissed, tensed her hands, and pushed herself to her feet. She extended her right arm, her shroud sharpening back into a blade shape.
Again!
Karis raised an eyebrow at her.
Really? You still want to fight?
She balled her hands into fists.
I'm just getting started.
The swordsman laughed, shaking his head.
You don't know when to give up.
He took a few steps closer, then sat back down.
Let's start over.
I walked back over to Marissa, shrugging off my uniform coat and putting it over her shoulders. She winced as she slipped it on, so I reached into my bag to retrieve the Ring of Regeneration and handed it to her. She put it on, activated it, and nodded in thanks.
Let me see your Phoenix Sigil for a minute.
She turned toward me so I could grab the sigil. With my new attunement, it only took me a few seconds to recharge, although I could feel my hand burning from the effort of using that much mana that quickly.
Thanks.
She turned back to Karis.
Ready?
I stretched, then readied myself again.
Ready as well.
We fought for hours, and I felt like we were getting just a little bit better at keeping up with Karis toward the end, especially when we attacked together. Our teamwork was getting better in general, too. Toward the end, we managed to block his attacks for each other once or twice, like I'd intended from the beginning. I never landed another hit on him, though. Neither did Marissa, not after he decided to take us more seriously. All in all, though, it was the first time I could remember enjoying combat training in a long, long time. I had Understanding Attunements class that day, and I did go to the class, but I barely paid attention at first. It was when Professor Conway introduced a guest that I regained my focus.
This is Professor Yang, a visiting teacher from Alaris Academy in Kaleford. While visiting, he's agreed to help give you an early introduction to a particularly difficult task, resisting mental compulsion spells.
Now that got me interested. Professor Yang was tall and heavy, with a pair of thick glasses and an uncovered attunement on his right hand. It was a controller attunement. I'd memorized the basic version of that particular mark after I'd seen how devastating Ordin's controller abilities were. I wanted to be certain I could identify one early if I ever saw one again. From the look of his particular attunement, I believed he was a citrine, but it was hard to tell. There were a number of variations of each individual attunement, even at any given level. I'd learned to pick out the main symbol early in life, but I was just learning about all the types of variations that were possible this year. Attunement levels each added an additional stroke to the rune's shape, but the location and shape of the stroke varied. We were scheduled to discuss mark variations later in the year, so I hadn't spent a lot of time studying it yet.
Professor Conway, thank you for having me. Students, good day to you all.
Professor Yang had a smooth voice, without much of a Kalish accent.
I believe Professor Conway has already introduced you to the basics of my attunement, the controller. But I'd like you to humor me and listen for a few moments before we begin the practical portion of the lesson. Some of this may be review.
Most of the class had been review for me in general, but I usually didn't mind. While I'd learned most of the basics about magic as a child, some of the elementary lessons had faded over time, and other things I'd been taught as a youth had been simplified to the point of inaccuracy. The higher degree of accurate information in classes like this one and my general magic theory class made them useful to attend, even if they did go over a lot of information I already knew. I imagine that classes like these were even more important for people like Marissa, who might not have had much of a formal education at all up to this point in her life. Professor Yang continued an overview of his attunement. It was, as he said, mostly the basics. I paid more attention once he got into information that was new.
Most controller spells involve working with perception mana. Perception mana influences how you experience the world, whereas mental mana is used for memory and analyzing information you already know.
Professor Yang put a finger against his forehead.
While there is a considerable amount of overlap between the two, perception mana is primarily tied to your emotions, senses, and instincts, whereas mental mana is more about reasoning and conscious decision-making. Both can be used for information-gathering purposes. A perception-improving spell might help you see or hear better, whereas a mental improvement spell might allow you to process something you couldn't otherwise, such as improving your mathematical abilities.
He gestured to the class.
Your brain uses both types of mana, and thus they work in tandem. This means that some mental spells might still impact how you perceive the world, and some perception spells might still alter how you analyze situations. This is how controllers influence you. Stand up.
We all stood up. It took me a moment to realize that I hadn't intended to stand up. That was really unsettling.
While I've been speaking, I've been filling the classroom with perception mana. Unless you...
No, this is unacceptable. I didn't like being controlled. My mind was everything. It was the definition of who I was as a person. I certainly wasn't going to let someone else play with it. I sat back down.
Professor Yang turned to me.
Ah, you discovered a weakness in this style of magic already. I did not explicitly command any of you to remain standing. There's a little bit of my own perception mana influencing each of your own minds right now, making you vulnerable to my commands. This can be extremely subtle, but once you realize you're being influenced, you can attempt to resist.
He gestured at me.
This student found a basic loophole in my command. Not only can this approach do the obvious and help you avoid committing acts you do not wish to, but it also stimulates your mental mana, and your mental mana is a natural defense against compulsion magic. Perception mana and mental mana work together, but they're opposites. They cancel each other out much in the same way that fire and water do. You can also attempt to use other perception spells to counter existing ones, but I suspect most of you do not have access to those. Thus, I recommend this simple task. If you apply your mental mana to the purpose of freeing yourself, eventually you may succeed.
I was already working on that. Now that I knew I was under a compulsion spell, I was actively converting some of my mana in my body into mental mana, then trying to cycle that through to my mind. That was a slow process, though, and I couldn't identify the perception mana to try to target it directly. Fortunately, I knew what the teacher was saying was accurate. I'd already managed to do something similar with the sleep spell that Sheridan had used. I could probably free myself from the spell like this, eventually. This was a much subtler effect, though, which raised a concern. How would I know that I was free if I hadn't detected the spell in the first place? That was unsettling.
Let's see if you can actively resist now that you know you're compelled. Everyone, sit back down.
I felt the urge to comply, but I was already sitting, so it didn't have any real impact. No one managed to resist just yet. We were all sitting now.
Stand up.
We all stood. I clenched my fists. I did not like this exercise. I could see a few other people nearby who were taking other actions to try to free themselves. I saw someone pinching himself, hoping pain would overwhelm the instincts. Someone else was covering her ears. That was the best plan I'd seen so far, but when the next command came,
sit down.
She sat too. Either she had still heard him with her ears covered, or the mana was activating and sending the command regardless of whether or not she heard the voice. I was cycling my mana as quickly as I could, but the effect didn't seem to be getting any weaker. In fact, it seemed to be getting harder to resist, not easier. Professor Yang explained why.
This might seem a bit unfair, but as I've been continuing to speak, I've been continuing to add more perception mana into the room to reinforce the spell. This is how controllers usually work. Since otherwise, people will begin breaking out shortly after they realize they're being controlled. This makes resisting compulsion something of an endurance test. You must outlast the controller's ability to control you, or wait until they make a mistake you can exploit. Unless, of course, you can force your way out of the spell by generating mental mana quickly enough, which is unlikely for first-year students.
Unlikely, yes, but not impossible. An exceptionally talented diviner or enchanter who had honed their skills throughout the entire year and already hit Carnelian might have had a chance. We didn't have anyone like that in this particular class. But I did have an idea. A terribly dangerous idea. I pressed two fingers of my right hand against the mark on my forehead, and I activated my Arbiter attunement. I'd been converting the mana in my right hand into mental mana, just like I'd done dozens of times before while enchanting. And now, I was using my Arbiter attunement to transfer that mana straight into my mind. Researcher had warned me that it was risky to try to recharge or empower my own attunement. It wasn't built for that, and the idea of damaging my mind was horrifying. Just not as horrifying as being controlled by someone else. I felt mana surge from my hand into my mind, and for a moment, the whole world went white. I felt a pressure build inside my ears, like I was swimming deep underwater, and pain building in my temples. And then I blinked, and the pressure was gone. The pain subsided a moment later, and the world was different. My enchanter attunement was on, without my willing it to do so. The room was swimming with colors, but they seemed brighter, crisper than usual. I felt like I could pick out more detail in each and every hue. Professor Conway and Professor Yang both had citrine auras. I'd known that before, but when I looked at Professor Yang, I could see so much more detail now. His shroud wasn't just a nebulous aura now. I could see it flowing out of his skin, and that it was thicker around both his hands and his chest. Meaning he had a second attunement. Probably a lung mark, since he was spreading mana by speaking. I could have guessed that from his casting method, but I couldn't have clearly identified it from this distance before. If I squinted, I thought I could even see a hint of the mana inside his body. I'd never seen anything like that. But more importantly, when I pulled my hand away from my forehead, I could see the thickness in the aura around my own body. The crimson was sharper, deeper than when I'd looked at my own shroud in the past. And in that moment, I'd understood. I'd pushed my enchanter attunement to carnelian. I stood up without prompting and bowed at the waist. "Thank you for the lesson." Professor Yang turned to me again.
"You're welcome. But we're not quite done yet. Sit back down."
I felt just the tiniest tug to obey. I ignored it.
"I'd rather not."
The whole class turned their eyes toward me. Someone actually cheered. Normally, I'd have been embarrassed by that, but you know what? Not that time. Professor Yang clapped softly.
"Very impressive. I rarely see first-year students that can break that spell, even controller students. Would you like to try resisting something more directed, rather than the class-wide spell?"
I shook my head. "Thank you for the offer, but not right now. That took a lot out of me, and if I'm being honest, I really don't want to deal with that feeling again."
"Well," the professor nodded in sympathy, "let's hope you never have to."
Given my luck, I knew exactly how likely that was. I was tempted to walk right out of the classroom after that, but I didn't want to be rude, and I knew there could be more useful information later on. Fortunately, Professor Yang didn't make any effort to include me in his control spells again. In fact, now that my enchanter attunement had gotten stronger, I could see the perception mana escaping as he spoke, and while it spread with his voice, it went around me. He was deliberately excluding me from the spell. I both appreciated that and respected that he was capable of doing it. Shaping a spell to avoid one person implied a tremendous degree of mana control. The rest of the lesson was focused on common signs that your allies were under compulsion spells and how they could be definitively identified. My own experiences with Derek and my books had given me some insight into that already, but he did clarify a few important things. Most controller magic was linked to the sound of the controller's voice. If you could change the sound of the controller's voice significantly enough that they couldn't be understood, that would prevent the victim from having to obey commands. Covering the victim's ears was effective for that to a point, but as we'd seen with that one clever student, just hearing the person partially was sometimes enough to trigger the command. You'd have to deafen someone entirely, or cover the controller's mouth completely, to be certain with that approach. But that did give me an idea that I hadn't considered before.
"Can you fake the controller's voice to give someone a command?"
"Oh. I suppose if they didn't know it was coming from you, absolutely. They just have to think they were following the controller's orders."
I grinned. One new idea to work with, if I could find a way to change my voice. I left the class feeling a strange combination of disgusted and giddy. I hated that someone had messed with my head, even briefly. But the feeling of hitting Carnelian as an enchanter, and seeing mana in a way I'd never seen it before, that felt pretty darn good. While I was walking back toward Derek's manor, I checked the mana in my enchanter attunement. It read 70 of 60. That meant I still had a little bit of extra mana from when I'd overcharged it. More importantly, it meant that my safe level had stabilized at 60, the minimum threshold for Carnelian. I didn't usually celebrate. I was too focused on my studies, and it just didn't feel important. But for something like this, I veered off from my path and stopped at a store. I bought an entire chocolate cake, and when I got back to Derek's place, I shared it with everyone. It was a personal accomplishment, sure, but cake was always better with friends. The rest of the day was pretty easy. I burned off the little bit of extra mana I had left over my normal limit by just watching people with my enchanter attunement active, taking in the sight of mana flowing out of people's bodies, and getting a better idea of the details I could perceive with a stronger attunement. Marissa's shroud hadn't looked any different from a normal Carnelian one before, but now I could tell that it looked more solid than mine. It was still permeable to my sight, but it gave the impression that I was looking through something more like ice, whereas my own aura looked more like a misty haze. Karis's shroud looked even stranger now. It was still almost colorless, although I could see the hints of silver in it more easily now, even when he wasn't doing anything with it. And it was subtle. But whenever his aura came in contact with another shroud, I could see tiny crackles of energy, and that the other shroud would begin to fray at the edges. I resolved not to stand too close to Karis for an extended period of time. After spending some time with my friends eating the cake, I spent more time studying foreign attunements and more time thinking about how I'd just used my own. I'd managed to increase my enchanter attunement's power permanently, and the improvement was more than the expected 2%. Was that because it was my own attunement? Or maybe because I'd converted the mana into a type that my attunement could easily process before I transferred it? It could be an extra large boost because it was the first time I've ever done it, too. Maybe the efficiency of mana transfers decreases over time, and the percent that researcher told me was an average taken over a long period. I paced my room, considering more possibilities. Maybe the boost that people retain is actually closer to a flat value rather than being a percentage. Or maybe it is a percentage, but the percentage varies based on current attunement level. Oh, could it have to do with the relative level of the target attunement compared to the level of the Arbiter attunement? That might explain how Katashi was able to increase Marissa's mana pool by such a high amount all at once. But no, that seems less likely. The source of mana should be irrelevant as long as it's pure. Even if the mana density was higher, the initial mana amount isn't the issue. It's how much mana your body can safely generate in the aftermath that matters. I wanted to ask Katashi for more information, but I knew I might never see him or another visage again. In the meantime, would it be safe to charge my own attunement regularly? I didn't have enough information. Taking risks with my mind was not appealing, but the benefits of that single action had been significant. My capacity had been going up by roughly 2 per day, and I'd been at 56 in the morning before classes. That meant that I'd gained roughly 4 mana from that transfer, maybe a little less, depending on rounding. That was a tremendous boost. An extra 4 mana per week, or even better, maybe something more like 8% if it was based on a percentage of my maximum. That would be an incredible boost if I could manage to figure out a way to do it routinely. But what if I was doing myself permanent damage? I needed to know, or at least have a better idea, before I risked it again. If I didn't have access to a visage to ask, my best bet was to find another arbiter. I didn't know of any, but maybe researcher did. So I paid her a visit. I expected her to be mad at me when she found out that I'd used the arbiter attunement on myself. Her reaction was a little different.
Ooh! What did it feel like? How high did you increase your mana pool to? And you said you retained more than a 2% increase?
How much?
I spent a few more minutes filling her in on everything else. She was practically bouncing, and I understood why now. She was a creature of knowledge, and I was teaching her something new. In essence, I was feeding her a meal that she'd never tasted, and presumably a good one.
Okay, so you want to know if you hurt yourself? Come here.
I hesitated, but drew closer.
Oh, don't be shy. This won't hurt, honest.
I came close enough to her enclosure for her to kneel down and put her hand on my forehead. Fortunately, the contact was brief and clinical.
Okay, all done.
She folded her arms.
I can't sense anything amiss with your mana. I'm not as good with diagnosing physical problems. You'd want a mender for that. But there's no mana scarring, and I don't sense any problems in the functionality of the attunement itself. It's working normally.
I nodded. Thanks. That does make me feel better. If I asked a mender to check me for physical problems, what would I ask about?
Hard to say. I honestly don't expect there to be any issues. Damaging your attunement was the main concern, and that didn't happen. I suppose you could check to see if your brain is bleeding or something.
I really didn't like that image, but fortunately, it also was pretty clear that researcher had no idea what she was talking about in that regard. Okay, thank you. Do you have any insights on where I could find another arbiter to talk to? She shook her head.
Unfortunately, no. There aren't any that are still at the university, and there haven't been any entering the Serpent Spire in the last couple years. Or at least, not declared as arbiters. People usually only put their first attunement on the entry forms. It's not necessary to include all of them.
That's inconvenient.
Arbiters and other people with restricted attunements are usually pretty secretive about it, since it gives them a competitive advantage if no one knows exactly what they can do. The Valian National Library might have documents with listings of other arbiters and contact information for them, but we don't have anything like that here.
That was tricky. The National Library was in Estermark, the national capital. It was hundreds of miles from Beaufort, the city where the academy was located. I could get to Estermark by train, but it would take a while. That arbiter that disappeared, any idea where he might have gone?
Warren Constantine? No indications of his whereabouts, unfortunately. Perhaps Ferris knows, but if she does, she hasn't said anything publicly.
If I could talk to Ferris, the Visage of Creation, I could probably solve a number of problems, assuming she'd actually give me the help I wanted, of course. My arbiter attunement would probably help with diplomacy with any visage, but it still didn't guarantee any results. And she was all the way in Calford, as far as I knew. Going there would take weeks or months. I considered my other options. What about experts that might know more about the restricted attunements?
Some of the Whispers might know how they work, or high-ranking members of the priesthood, or people with other restricted attunements.
Sheridan. It was an obvious lead, now that I considered it. Sheridan presumably had been using a restricted attunement for a while, but I hadn't asked them for any information. Of course, that might necessitate another trade if it was considered forbidden knowledge, unless I could convince them that information about my own attunement didn't count as forbidden for me. It would be best to prepare for a trade, if only to keep Sheridan interested in dealing with me in the future. They were a valuable resource, and I didn't want to squander that by asking for favors with nothing in return. Of course, it also occurred to me that Tristan might know more, but I wasn't going to ask him. I didn't want to even think about the idea of owing him something, not when I was so conflicted about his situation in general. I think I know who to ask. Thanks, Researcher. Researcher gave me a little bow.
You're quite welcome, Arbiter. Please come see me anytime you have further questions. Or more information to share?
I waved and headed to the exit. I'll do that. I had a few agenda items to address before the next test. The first order of business was getting a mender to check my condition. Researcher was probably right that I was fine, but I wanted someone specialized in healing to take a look, just in case. I headed to Derek's mansion to drop off a couple books I'd picked up in the divinatory. I'd borrowed a few more tomes on foreign attunements, as well as a couple on advanced enchantments and mana manipulation. Given my level of access to the restricted section,
I also asked Researcher if there were any other powerful magical items that were currently being researched back there, just in case. She mentioned two more things that interested me. One was a ring that utilized pre-attunement-era sorcery, much like the Jaden Box did. The other was a gemstone that appeared to be intelligent. Unfortunately, both were under more security than the Jaden Box had been, locked inside a safe that required a combination. Even the notes on them were in the safe, so I couldn't learn more about them. I got the names of the people who were leading the research teams on the items, but I didn't recognize either of them. The one studying the ring was a Professor Henge, apparently one of the other enchanting teachers. The other was Lady Whitebrook, who apparently wasn't a teacher, but a spire researcher who lived right nearby, much like Derek did. Both of the items interested me, but neither was a priority. I had more than enough things to deal with. Patrick stopped me when I was heading back out of the manor.
Where are you going?
The hospital. Nothing to worry about. I just might have done something slightly unwise.
Again?
I folded my arms. What's that supposed to mean? Patrick laughed.
I'm just teasing. You're always experimenting with stuff. There are bound to be a few little things that go wrong here and there.
He was right, of course, but I waved a hand dismissively anyway.
Fine, fine, you're forgiven.
I'll be back soon. I started heading for the door.
Wait, hold on!
I turned my head back.
Hmm? If you're going to the hospital, there's something you should know.
I raised an eyebrow.
Oh? Jin is there.
I turned right back around.
Wait, what?
Patrick turned away, looking sheepish.
I was going to tell you, but I wasn't sure if it was a good idea. I checked in on him when Sarah and I went to the hospital the other day. He was in bad shape at the time and, well, I didn't know if he was going to make it.
I took a step forward, staring at him.
And you didn't tell me?
He didn't meet my gaze.
If you visited him and he died afterward, you'd have never forgiven yourself. You'd have told yourself that you should have done something, that you could have fixed things if you'd tried harder. It's who you are.
And if he's dead now, I have to deal with the fact that I didn't do anything because you didn't tell me about it. Thanks for that! Patrick turned back to me, shaking his head.
You're not a doctor, Corrin, and you can't fix everything in general. If you'd tried, you might have made things worse. And honestly, there was someone who did need you at the time, and I was worried that if you went to help Jin, you'd forget all about her. You always focus on one person at a time. Whoever you feel like you need to save.
I winced. He wasn't wrong.
You still could have told me.
I could have.
And you could have told me about everything with the book and the prisoners in the tower immediately. I just waited a few days. You waited a lot longer.
I sighed. I wasn't good at conversations like this.
Fine. Fine. I don't know. Talk to him.
This time, I was the one who looked away.
I don't know what I'd say. He tried to kill someone. Sure, because none of us were thinking about the consequences of what we were doing for other countries, including his. I'm not saying I agree with how he did it. I don't, not in the slightest. But he's your friend, and you should probably hear him out.
Bah. Fine. I couldn't handle this talk anymore. I waved to Patrick.
I'm leaving.
Tell the others I'll be back later if they ask.
Patrick returned my wave with his usual enthusiasm. Good luck!
I almost laughed. Luck was one of the few things I trusted even less than I trusted my social abilities. Getting my medical check was the easy part.
Looks like you're just fine, the mender informed me. You said you infused your mind with more mana somehow?
I nodded. Yeah, it's a rare attunement. I could have said restricted, but they didn't need that much detail. I wasn't going to be dishonest either, though. Misleading a doctor could get me false information about my own condition.
Sometimes students try to make it through their exams by drinking a bunch of potions with a similar function and end up causing themselves long-term damage. My advice is to avoid doing it too frequently and don't try to push yourself to more than one stage higher in your attunement. As long as you use your attunement sparingly, you should be fine.
I gave a gesture of acknowledgement. That was similar to what Researcher had told me.
Thanks.
After that,
I just finished up my paperwork and payment and such. I felt relieved that I was physically okay, but I was dreading what happened next. I asked at the front desk for Jin's status. They'd finished his surgery a day ago, and he was in a recovery room by himself. Unfortunately, visitors were allowed, so I didn't have an easy excuse to just run back home. I knocked on the door to his room. There was a brief pause, then I heard his voice.
"Am I awake?"
I opened the door and went inside. The room was smaller than one of our dorms, unadorned save for the hospital bed and a nearby table. Jin was sitting up in the bed, holding a book. He was shirtless, but nearly his entire chest was covered with bandages.
"Corin."
I nodded, stepping in and closing the door behind me. "Jin?" He closed his book with a crack and set it down on the table next to his bed.
"I don't suppose you're here to tell me that you've finished more of my commissions?"
I shook my head. "Not this time." The corner of his lips shifted upward, just a fraction.
"I don't suppose you're delivering me a meal? The food here makes the cafeteria look gourmet."
"I hadn't considered that." Jin chuckled, wincing in the aftermath and moving a hand to his chest.
"A shame."
I gestured to a chair near his bed. "May I?" His expression shifted to stern.
"That depends on why you're here."
I wasn't sure how to answer that. "Patrick told me you were here." Jin nodded.
"He's checked in a few times. Loyal, that one."
"Saying that for contrast?"
"Maybe."
"Which one of us is the disloyal one?" Jin shrugged a shoulder.
"I've been debating that for a while. Probably both, in our own ways."
"You didn't have to shoot Vera."
"Obviously."
He folded his hands.
"But I was afraid. I'm still afraid. And I couldn't count on anyone else to help."
I balled my hands into fists. "We could have talked about options."
"Like what exactly?" "Your solution was to hand everyone over to Katashi. Given time, Vera is probably going to go free, because she cooperated. That probably pleases you, and in Katashi's mind, it probably passes for justice. But when she gets back home, she's going to make more weapons, and someday those weapons are going to be used to kill thousands of people, maybe more."
"Killing Vera wouldn't have stopped artificial attunement research. They've been doing it for decades."
"No, but it might have slowed down one particular research branch. The people focused on making artificial god-beast attunements. Those terrify me, Corin. And they should terrify you, too. You saw what Mizuchi was capable of. The god-beasts themselves are far worse."
I had a vivid memory of the damage that Mizuchi had caused, and how close we'd come to being annihilated just by being close enough to be hit by a shockwave from her breath.
"You're right.
And that's what you wanted to happen to Velia." Jin winced.
"I didn't want that. But you're right. I thought it was the right answer. Katashi might have wiped out the people in Velia who were commissioning those god beasts, and maybe even gone after the people in Kaelford too. It was a messy solution. Not perfect by any means. My hope would be that Katashi would have shown restraint and only targeted the people responsible for all this."
I tightened my jaw. "We both know Katashi wasn't in a good frame of mind to show restraint." Jin shrugged.
"I suspect he would have, if I had a chance to tell him the responsible parties and show more details about what they were working on."
I folded my arms. "We didn't have that much information." Jin turned his head away.
"No. You didn't have that much information. I did."
I stared at him for a moment, uncertain. When I finally replied, I was furious. "What? What the resh haven't you been telling me? I thought you weren't a spy." Jin laughed.
"I'm not a spy, Corin. I just did more digging than you did, and I didn't tell you everything. You certainly haven't told me everything either."
"When did you possibly have time to do more digging? And why wouldn't you tell me?" Jin ran a hand through his hair, sighing.
"You remember the morning before we went to see Vera? When we got the Jaden box?"
I nodded. "Of course."
"Remember how I was already at the divinatory when you arrived?"
I drew in a breath.
"Yeah?" "I'd been there for hours. First, the night before. I learned about Vera and the project designation QSTN. Researcher wouldn't help me initially, so I went through files myself. Eventually, she got so frustrated by my inefficiency that she told me she'd send an information request to Alaris Academy for me. When I came back in the morning, it was approved, and she handed over a set of documents. That didn't make me any happier.
I trusted you to look into that for me while we were in there, and you
already had the information and distracted you with the Jaden box, which was completely unrelated. Yes. I balled my hands into fists.
Why? What did you find?
Information on the artificial attunement project that Vera was working on. Researchers still wouldn't give me everything, but there was enough in there to form an ugly picture. The most relevant portion? Vera was not just an analyst, or a mere participant in the project. She was the director for the entire Godbeast Attunement Project. There was someone above her in charge of artificial attunements in general, but Vera had a critical role.
That still doesn't justify trying to murder her. Even a project director can be replaced.
He shook his head. I'm not finished. They took some sensible precautions when working on those attunements, with the knowledge that giving children power that could eventually grow to godbeast levels was tremendously dangerous.
Jin took a breath.
One of those precautions was a set of control sigils built into the artificial attunements and linked directly to unique marks on the project director. Much how a return bell has an anchor, these marks were inexorably intertwined. To prevent anyone else from accessing the control seals, a part of Vera's mana was stored inside the artificial attunements on the children. If a control command came from anyone else, it wouldn't work.
I processed that. You're saying that Vera had a means of controlling any one of these artificial attuned, like Orden controlled Derek?
Precisely. This is, I believe, why she was so important to everyone. Not just her knowledge, but because she is the key to controlling the existing attuned. They could make more, but it took several years to get a viable test case. My hope was that if I removed Vera from the equation, the intervening years would be enough time for Katoshi to shut down the projects entirely.
Why wouldn't you have told me something that important? I might have...
Your mother is one of the people who approved testing Echion's abilities in the Serpent Spire.
I stopped and stared. What?
Lara Liren was on the list, along with several other city council members. And no, I don't know your mother's name because of any sort of spying. Sarah mentioned Lady Liren in conversation, and I connected her with the council member that you and I saw in the memory crystal with Karras. I judged that you would be less likely to cooperate in anything that might lead Katoshi to take steps against your mother.
I glowered at him. You were going to point Katoshi toward potentially killing my mother?
I don't think he would have taken such an extreme step against someone who simply signed the paperwork on the Velia side for running the tests. But I did anticipate you having this reaction, which is why I didn't tell you about what I'd learned. I could have omitted part of it, like that your mother was involved. But if I'd told you the beginning portion, you might have dragged the rest of it out of researcher yourself. And then you very likely would have abandoned the whole mission.
I didn't know what to say to that, so I just settled for angry. You lied to me.
Mostly in terms of omission, but yes. But in fairness, Vera lied to you too. First, when you were in the jail cell. Then later, when we...
I cut him off. I don't care about Vera. You manipulated me toward taking steps that could have resulted in harming my mother.
I'm sorry for that, but I still believe I did the right thing. You would not have responded rationally, and there was too much at stake.
I was relying on you. I took a step closer, my hand still balled. Jin pulled away, alarmed.
I truly am sorry, Corin.
I don't care if you're sorry, Jin. That's not good enough.
Let me make it up to you then. Please.
His voice was pleading. No, I shook my head. I don't think so. Did you even consider what would happen to those children with the attunements if you'd done things your way? Jin nodded slowly.
Even if Katoshi killed them, which I doubt, it would be better than letting them be used as weapons of war. And if you have any doubt that is what they would have been used for, you're deluding yourself.
You could have told me this. I would have listened to you. We could have...
You know that isn't true. Your family means everything to you. That's been clear to me from the start.
He wasn't wrong. What would I have done if Jin had told me all of this in advance?
Would I have cooperated with him and tried to assassinate Vera, just to prevent the possibility that she would go free? No, I told myself. I wouldn't have taken that route. I still wouldn't have been willing to kill her, or to risk my mother. Which meant that, to a degree, what Jin was saying was true. I wouldn't have gone his way. But could we have found another option? A third road, if we'd worked together? Maybe. I couldn't know. And for the moment, I was too angry to properly consider it. I unclenched my fist, turning and heading back toward the door. I'm leaving. Jin's voice was faint, pained.
I really am sorry, Corrin. But when I think about the damage those godbeast attuned could have done...
I turned my head, shooting him one final glare. You've made your point. It wasn't deliberate, but I slammed the door on the way out. I was still fuming as I fled the hospital quickly after that. I didn't know what to think about what Jin had said. Was I automatically negatively disposed toward any sort of plan that involved shooting an unconscious woman in the back? Probably. Was I being irrational because the plan he mentioned would have risked my own mother? Almost certainly. Did that mean I was wrong and that Jin's plan was right? Not necessarily. Jin may have accurately predicted certain elements of my reasoning, but I still thought, or maybe just hoped, that he simply hadn't given me enough credit, that I would have found a way to use the information and come up with a better plan. When is using lethal force acceptable? I wasn't so innocent that I believed there was always a diplomatic solution to every situation. The problem was determining when and where the optimal solution was to take the irreversible step of removing someone from the world. And for someone who preferred peaceful solutions, I knew I wasn't particularly great at reading people. That was a critical flaw, and there was no easy solution to it. Magic could give me shortcuts that might help in the future. I could try to learn things like spells for detecting if someone was speaking the truth, or even to try to control someone if I decided that was more moral or more effective than physical violence. But no magic I knew of could tell me the result of my actions. People had been trying to divine the future with magic since it was first discovered, and the results were always unreliable at best. So, no matter what method I used to try to solve a problem, I'd never know if I'd picked the right answer, and if I'd picked fighting against my friends like I had with Jin. I'd always have to wrestle with wondering if I was right. I really, truly hoped that I wouldn't have to make a decision like that with Tristan. Chapter 11. A Persistent Hatred for Colored Square Puzzles. I spent the rest of that day studying alone and trying to get invasive thoughts out of my mind. I had too many doubts about Jin and Patrick and about my own priorities in life in general. On the positive side, I finally found the time to start really digging into foreign attunements. I stopped when I found something that sounded fascinating. The Juggernaut attunement utilizes transference mana to create powerful bursts of kinetic energy, allowing the user to move rapidly around the battlefield. Their specialization is converting their shroud into transference mana, which they can use to deflect physical attacks and smash through obstacles. This is difficult to maintain for long periods of time, so Juggernauts generally only shift their shroud for a few moments at a time. The first part was how I was trying to use the Ring of Jumping already, and the second idea was very appealing. Most attunements had limited defense against physical attacks, and deflecting them with transference mana sounded like a perfect solution that might be possible with my own skill set. I wasn't sure if it would be possible to convert my shroud at my attunement level, though. Shroud manipulation was a Sunstone level ability for most attunements, but I already knew there were exceptions, like Guardians. Maybe having two different Carnelian attunements that both generated transference mana would be enough to let me accomplish the same thing? There was only one way to find out. I activated my Enchanter attunement to get a better sense of the mana flowing within my body, as well as the two shrouds around it. I could sense the mana inside my body easily enough, but the shroud was more or less invisible to me without my attunement active. That was a key problem. I couldn't feel the mana from my shroud in the same way I felt the mana within my body, and that meant I couldn't just mentally command it to change into another mana type,